Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Friday morning, November 16th. My name is Rob Goster. I have a good show on the way for you today. I was able to catch up with my buddy from Stadium, Jeff Goodman. We had a good conversation about what happened with Villanova against Michigan, what happened with UConn and Syracuse, about his new podcast life, about conversations with Bernardo Sidney and how all that played out. I think you are going to enjoy it. Before we get into that, I have to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. If you rate it, if you review it, if you download it, any interaction that you have with this podcast in that app, it really does help us. It helps within the metrics. It helps us within the rankings. It makes me look better to my bosses. And if they are happy, then I am happy. If I am happy, you are getting a better show. So simply giving me 5 stars and saying nice things about me will help you out in the long run. I promise. Anything you can do, I really would appreciate it. And now let's get into that conversation with Jeff Goodman. And now let me welcome on Jeff Goodman of Stadium. Everyone knows that. This is our second try to record this this podcast segment. I had just called him before, and I guess you hung up on me or something, man. I don't know what's going on.
No, we're going to try to make this work. I'm driving through some pretty, they're not horrible weather conditions. Here in Boston, we handle adverse weather conditions very well, unlike some other areas of the country. North Carolina that shuts down, you know, if they get like a little sprinkle of snow, they shut the entire state down. And that's happened to me a few times, actually, when I've gone in North Carolina.
You know, that's what it was like in D.C. It was absolutely miserable living there. Like, if there was the threat of snow, if the weathercasters said, the weathermen, if they said it might snow 3 days from now, we might get a dusting. The entire city shuts down. Everyone goes and raids the grocery stores. It was absolutely awful. No one had any idea how to drive in it.
Well, even if there's a little rain, right? Trump doesn't even come out, right? I mean, he won't even walk outside if there's a little bit of rain.
Yeah. Hey, man, look, you can't have that hair get messed up.
That's right. It's a beautiful head around.
Well, listen, you are now part of this podcast lap in this podcast grind where you have to beg people to talk on the phone while they're driving to a basketball game. So you know what this life is like. What's the name of your podcast? Now, I know you were begging for new name recommendations. It used to be called Good and Plenty. What happened? Did you get in trouble with the candy makers?
No, I'm still good with the podcast. Is still Good and Plenty, but I was starting a written column, and I'm like, I can't really call it Good and Plenty if the podcast is called Good and Plenty. So I put out suggestions, and I ended up not branding the written weekly column because somebody who I really, really value at ESPN, one of the best editors there is, a guy named Chris Sproul, advised me. He was like, you know what? I wouldn't brand it. Like, I would just tweet out whatever the lead is of the column every week. That's going to get more, you know, attention than if you just go Good and Plenty or whatever it was going to be, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, whatever dumb take off my name that I was going to call it. So I decided to take his advice because, again, he knows he might be as good an editor as I've ever been around in this business. And I've been around some great ones. And I've been around, you know, listen, there was one at ESPN that ran college basketball who was not so great, but he was the only one. I've been around, honestly, some unbelievable editors over the years. So Chris Sproul, Tony Moss, two of the best that are both over at ESPN right now.
You know, it's probably a good thing that I never became your editor then, but that's a different story for a different day. The reason I actually brought up the podcast was one to kind of pump it up for you a little bit since I know you probably need my help. I've been podcasting for like 3 years. I'm kind of a big deal in this world, Goodman.
You're an expert.
I'm an expert.
You are. You really are.
But the other part of it is, so I don't know if people know this, but you are kind of like at heart kind of a journalism nerd. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying that in a good way. It's a compliment. Yeah. Some of the rivalries that you may have tend to result from what
I don't have rivalries. Come on, I have no rivalries.
You have some rivalries, but some of it results from a place where you are. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's like kind of a journalism ethics thing for you. And I know that you're really, really big into that. So the question I wanted to ask you was the most interesting thing for me that's come out of your podcast to date is you did one with Bernardo Sidney.
Everyone should know. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably know who he is and what his story is. And one of the things that he said on it was that he got paid, someone in his family got paid by somebody on Rick Stansbury's coaching staff while he was at Mississippi State. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, when you podcast, this is a different medium than just the written word, and you don't necessarily have an editor that's going to go through everything that's said on the podcast. So was there any hesitation for you in just going with everything that he said? Like, how did that process and kind of that decision end up working for you? Just kind of take me through how you deal with situations like that in something that's a new medium and not necessarily, you know, a newspaper or the AP or ESPN.com.
And I've tried to make, especially the college version, I do an NBA version every Tuesday, a college version every Thursday. And especially with the college one, I've tried to make it different and unique and not just schmoozing with another media person every week or not bringing on a coach that's going to give me coach speak. I might bring on a few coaches, and I'll bring on some media people as well. I have Robbie Hummel on last week. I'll bring you on for the right price. but I wanted, you know, like Matt Ramker, you know, brought him on, who worked for Andy Miller. I thought that would be an interesting one. I just brought on Mike Rice. Nobody's really heard from Mike Rice a whole lot. They've read about him a little bit, what he's doing, but I figured he'd be an interesting one based on the things that happened at Rutgers and also based on the fact that he's been on the other side as an AU coach, and he could talk about what he would do to fix recruiting, how bad the cheating is, because he's dealt with the recruitments of some high-level kids in this year's class. So I guess with Renardo, I've always – kept in touch with Renardo, always. He's a kid that, like, I first saw when I was at ABCD, and he was 14 years old, and I fell in love with his game right then. He was so good, so talented, so big. He was like, had some Magic Johnson to his game then. Didn't pan out. I think a lot of people know the whole story. You know, USC, UCLA couldn't take him because there were so many questions around his eligibility and maybe his family asking for money, whatever. So I wanted to get him on the podcast and talk to him about what he was doing now and also kind of what went down years ago or what didn't go down. And so I flat out just asked him, hey, you know, do you think you got paid? Cause he said, he was like, we were living in a $1 million mansion in LA and they moved from Mississippi to LA. They had nothing in Mississippi. And I said, like, did you know, like, did you ask your dad? He said, no, I was a kid. I didn't ask my dad. I just was happy we were getting all these things. I was getting, you name it, whatever he wanted, he was getting for nothing. So he didn't really, he's like, how many 16-year-olds are going to ask their parents, like, what's going on specifically? What he told me was his mother got paid by Stansbury, that his dad had no relationship with Stansbury at all, went to one game in his entire Mississippi State career, that it was his mom who got paid. So I did the podcast on a Monday, because it worked for me. I was going to be out of town, and I knew nobody else was going to get Renardo till Thursday when the podcast dropped. I tweeted out on Wednesday kind of that I'm going to have Renardo on. It's going to drop Thursday. I'm in New York at the time. I get a call like an hour later from Patricia Sid. I think her last name is Sydney. It might not be anymore. The parents are not together. And she said she was quite curious and as to what her son said about getting paid or not getting paid or whatever. And I didn't remember all the specifics, but obviously I remembered kind of what he said for the most part. I said, Patricia, like, you know, I don't remember everything, but I think he said some things about you getting some compensation from Mississippi State, not specific. And she was pissed. She was like, that's not true. I'm going to start talking to everybody about the fact I did not get anything from Rick Stansbury and this and that. So I don't know how it played out within the family after that. I haven't talked to Renardo since. I hope he and his mom are talking right now.
Look at you just ripping families apart, Goodman.
No, I'm definitely not trying. But I just felt like, and I tried to ask like non-leading questions because people think that I have this axe to grind against Rick Stansbury, and I don't have an axe to grind against him. I would just say, and I told Rick this to his face a couple years ago, if I did a poll of coaches around the country and who they perceive to be the biggest cheater in college basketball, and this was when he was an assistant at Texas A&M even, Rick Stansbury would be in the top five, and he probably would be one, two, or three at the end of the day. That doesn't mean he's definitely cheated. All I know is I've had plenty of coaches say to me, when Rick Stansbury walks in the gym recruiting, I'm out. I'm out. If he's at the same gym as I am, recruiting the same kid I'm recruiting, I'm out.
Yeah, that's the kind of reputation you have when you get the players that he gets, I guess, is probably the way to phrase it. But you guys should definitely go and listen, find that podcast. It's good and plenty. You can find it, I'm sure, in every single podcast app that you listen to this one. And the Mike Rice one was... Go ahead.
I want to know if you have any suggestions, since you're the podcast guru. I came out here just to see if I could pick up some knowledge, soak up some, something here that I can utilize going forward. What do you got for me?
I mean,
what do I suck at?
Everything? The biggest issue is just you don't have a great personality. the issue is the host.
I've heard that before. I've definitely heard that before.
No, it's really good, man. You get people to open up and the one with Mike Rice was good. And the thing I like about it, and you mentioned this, was that you find different angles. I'm on here. What I do best is kind of X's and O's and nerd out a little bit about kind of going deep inside the game and maybe a little bit more than just kind of the topical narrative kind of stuff. What you're really good at is getting people to talk about things that aren't necessarily the easiest things to talk about, like you did with Renardo and like you did with Mike Rice. I would definitely suggest people listen to that. He had some interesting insights. I was not expecting his answer. I'm not going to give away what it was, but I was not expecting his answer on the level of cheating in college basketball. That one kind of...
it was pretty interesting, right? Pretty interesting.
It threw me off a little bit. All right, so let's talk about things that have happened in college basketball this season.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start with this. The most surprising result of the year has been Duke beating Kentucky the way that they won, Michigan going into Villanova and manhandling them, Buffalo going into West Virginia and winning in overtime, UConn beating Syracuse, I guess Auburn blowing out Washington. I think those are the five big results, kind of surprising results so far. Which one surprised you the most?
I mean, I'm still going with Duke over Kentucky. Maybe it's because I was there and I saw it in person and I was just like, what the hell is going on? I mean, I guess if I was at Villanova, which was a home game for Villanova, and watching them get manhandled by Michigan, I probably would have had the same sentiment. But I just think by being there and watching a team that has as much talent as Kentucky and watching Calipari and Kay, who do not like each other, right? And Kay pounding Calipari's team into submission, kind of by playing his own game, beating him in his own game with one and dones, and just kind of the whole thing that it encompassed, it shocked me. First game to have R.J. Barrett and Zion and Reddish and Trey Jones play as well as they did in Kentucky, just kind of, other than maybe Keldon Johnson and Reed Travis, none of them came to play. They all looked like deer in headlights. So I would say that one, but again, that's based on probably more of me being there, that I will never forget that game probably as long as I live, because it was so shocking.
Yeah, I think that result was – I think that's the best way to say it. That game was more shocking, but I think it was more impressive what Michigan did for a couple of reasons.
No doubt.
One,
Villanova.
That Villanova program does not get blown – that just does not happen to them. They don't get embarrassed like that. Part of it was this was the rematch of the national title game. Part of it was – this was the opening of the $25 million renovation that they did to their on-campus facility. For people that don't know, Villanova plays some of their home games at Finneran Pavilion, which is a 6,500-seat little you feel like you are at a kind of small liberal arts. I don't know if you've ever been there, Goodman, but it's very tiny. Yeah. It's very compact.
Yep.
It feels like you could probably throw a basketball from the court and hit any single seat in that gym without much of an effort. They had a $25 million renovation to the arena. They had a massive cocktail party out in front of, in the lobby before the game started for all the alumni there. It was $3,000 a ticket if you wanted to sit courtside. It was $300 bucks just to get in the door. It was Like I said, the rematch of the national title game. Like, this was the biggest event. Villanova doesn't play big-name teams in that gym either. Like, that's normally where they play, like, LaSalle. Or if Bucknell is coming to town and they don't think they're going to be able to sell out the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. Like, that's where they play their big games at the Wells Fargo Center. That's what, like, if Xavier comes to town, that's where they play. Yep. If, you know, Syracuse is coming to town, that's where they play. They don't play those guys on campus. They played this game on campus, and they just got absolutely embarrassed. Like, I don't think it's necessarily surprising that Michigan won. I think that it's surprising that Michigan absolutely stole their soul like that. Because the one thing about Villanova teams is, like, they don't get scared by anything.
They play hard.
And they play hard.
They play hard. They're not intimidated. They're gonna kind of hang in there no matter what and try to grind out a win, even if they're not making threes, right?
Mm-hmm. So what was your biggest takeaway from that game? Was it more that Michigan might be better than we thought, or Villanova's a little bit further away than we expected? Because I have a pretty strong take on that, but I'm going to open it up to you first.
I think it's Villanova right now is further away than we thought. I do. I think Michigan's going to be good, but I don't think Michigan's going to be like elite. Like, all of a sudden we're going to put them in the top 10 and they're going to stay there all year. Although John Beilein is frigging an absolute wizard at what he does. I mean, he's incredible. I just think, again, when you're a program like Villanova and you lose four of your top six, and you're expecting to lose a couple of them, but if you had Dante DiVincenzo and Amari Spellman on this team right now, it would look completely different. Completely different. But when you lose four of your top six and you're Villanova and you're not prepared for this, and I know, again, people are putting Villanova on this pedestal because they've won two of the last three titles, but it's still kind of unfair because they're not prepared to handle this. They still can't, like, even Jamon Quinterly, like, I was surprised that he's not able to make more of an impact, right? And they're not starting Jamon Quinterly from day one over Colin Gillespie. You know, that surprises me because he's a top 25 recruit, and Colin Gillespie was recruited by nobody out of high school. But I think Jay Wright always is under the mentality now of, like, you got to earn it. If you're a young guy, you got to earn it. Otherwise, it's handed down, and Colin Gillespie is next. He's waited his turn.
Yeah, and it's not just that. Quinterly was an absolute disaster on the defensive end, and that was the biggest thing to
terrible.
Me. And you nailed this when it came to what's wrong with Villanova. They don't. So the thing about them and about that program is that Jay Wright, like, teaches these guys how to be basketball players. That's the biggest thing. Like, the way that he kind of goes out and recruits is he'll find the dudes that he knows are going to play their balls off every second they're on the court, right? Like, he wants that kind of toughness. He wants that grittiness. The mantra is more or less, you're going to play hard every second that you're on the floor or you're not going to play, and I'll teach you how to be a basketball player and do the things that Villanova does. And the problem is right now he's got a bunch of guys that are going to go out and play hard that just don't understand how they're supposed to switch defensively. They don't understand when they're supposed to get this guy, when they're supposed to get that guy. They don't understand the switching when it comes to exchanges. There were so many layups and so many wide open looks on defensive mistakes and defensive miscommunications that just don't happen with Villanova. Offensively, those guys don't understand how to do Villanova things. Like, Villanova doesn't run more than about five plays. They have a system and a way that they play. They call them their concepts. It's all read and react stuff. It's all, okay, if this guy drives here and he's going to kick the ball to me, I'm going to be open right here because he wants to draw this defender, and then I can drive here, and that's going to mean this guy is open. And they all understand how to play with each other. And all these freshmen and sophomores are just not there yet. So I think that...
Do they get there, though? That's the question. Where do they get in February? Where are they in February?
I think that they're better. I think that they're probably the best team in the Big East, and I think that they are probably in the conversation.
Wait. You're disrespecting Greg St. Jean and St. John's right now.
You know what?
This is BS.
You know what? I need to see it with St. John's. I understand why people are going to say that they're one of the better teams because they got the talent, and Mustafa Heron's a stud, and Shamori Ponce can go out and get a bucket, and I get all that. I'm with you. I know Marvin Clark. I know they got Justin Simon. I get it, right? I need to see it before I can put them in that conversation. It's just where
I'm with you.
I'm at with St. John's.
I'm kidding.
I know. I've gotten I've heard from people on Twitter about that, and I had to get that rant out. So I think that
I'm the same way.
I think that Villanova probably is we need to adjust our expectations to them being something closer to a 20 to 25, top 20 to 25 team than a top 5 to 10 team.
Definitely. Definitely. And right now, they're not even a top 25 team. They're probably a top 50 team right now.
Yeah, and you know, a big problem with it is when you've spent the last, 6 years having your program get run by Ryan Arcidiacono and then get run by Jalen Brunson, and now you're asking Colin Gillespie, who is, you know, all due respect to him, he's probably more of like an Atlantic 10 point guard than he is a big, big East point guard at this point. Like, if he's your backup point guard for Villanova, you're probably doing okay because he can make a shot, he's going to play hard, he's going to do the things he's asked to do. He's not Jalen Brunson. And Javon Quinterly's got the talent, but he's just not there yet. So,
hey, I got a question that I'm thinking of off the top of my head right now, because you just mentioned, you know, Big East, and it certainly appears like the Big East is going to be down this year. Definitely down.
Oh, yes.
The AAC is down. The Atlantic 10 is down. The Pac-12 is down. Like, are all these bids going to come from the damn ACC and the Big Ten? And the Big Ten looks great so far.
Yeah, the Big Ten is going to get a lot of teams in the tournament because they are winning all these games in the non-conference. The ACC is going to get a lot of teams in the tournament. And you know what I hope? I hope that what happens is, like, this that locks Buffalo into an at-large bid regardless of what happens, right? Oh, and then maybe someone like a Western Kentucky gets in. And then someone I'm blanking on good mid majors, but somebody comes out of nowhere and goes like 18
Northeastern.
And yes.
Well, Northeastern, who just, you know, beat Alabama, not just beat them, pounded them.
Yes, I hope that's where it comes from, and those are the teams that end up getting in. And hopefully, it's not going to happen because that's just not the way this stuff works, but I hope that that's what we see happen. Buffalo's got to get in at this point. They won at Southern Illinois, and they won at West Virginia. As long as they don't do something really stupid in league play, I think that they're probably going to be a tournament team. One last thought on Michigan, and I'm curious how you feel about this. So, they are already elite defensively. I think the addition of Iggy Bradzikis is big for them because it lets them go like full small ball without actually being small.
Bradzikis.
Whatever his name is. Iggy, that dude can play.
You can call
play.
Me. You can call me
that
Iggy
dude
as long
can
as you
play.
Go with
his haircut. I'm good with that. I like the haircut, man. I'm on.
Why don't you do that today? Before you get down to Madison Square Garden tonight, why don't you go to the barber and ask for the Iggy Bradzikis haircut?
So I finally found, I about a year and a half ago, I moved from the DC suburbs up to the Philly suburbs. I live in New Jersey now, and I finally found a good barber. Finally, it's this dude, Jonathan. He works at this salon, and he's the first guy where I've actually been able to go in, and he's just like, oh, I know what haircut you want, and he gave me a good haircut. I've been looking for it for a year, and having a good haircut is so important. And I just wonder what he would do if I walked in there with a picture of Iggy Bradzikis and said, give me this haircut. He might just kick me out and say, I'm not going to do that to you.
It'd be awesome. It'd be awesome. If you showed up in the garden with the Iggy haircut, it would actually, what would be better is if you showed up at Mohegan Sun tomorrow with the Iggy haircut and we took a picture of you next to Iggy with the Iggy haircut.
The reason it works for him is because that dude is, there's, I say this in the nicest way possible. Like, there's a little bit of a screw loose there, and he fits in perfectly with Xavier Simpson and Charles Matthews, who are just dudes that are wired differently. And you put him at the five, you put Isaiah Livers at the four, you put Xavier Simpson at the one, Charles Matthews at the two. You got like the four toughest dudes on the court, four most athletic dudes on the court. You can play big. You have two big guys that can step out and hit a three. Like, that team is going to be good. And here's why I'm bullish on them, Goodman. We know they're going to be elite defensively. Like, they've proven that. They're not taking a step back. They did it last year. They're already doing it this year. And now you're going to tell me that you have a Hall of Famer, maybe the greatest offensive mind in this generation in college basketball. You're going to give him 5 months to figure out what to do with all these players and how to be good offensively with that group of guys. That's Michigan's going to be really tough in March, man. They might not be as good as they are going to be yet. They're probably like a top 10 to 12-ish team. But, man, give John Beilein 5 months with these guys. He's going to figure something out. Like, they might be back in that title game again in April.
Wow. That all right, a bold statement. That's bold right there.
But think about
bold,
it, because they're already elite defensively. The problem with Beilein teams is they don't always guard, and they're at their best in March. Like, I wouldn't bet on it at this point. But if you like, if you think about it like that, like why can't they get there?
No, they can, because again, like you said, listen, if they're going to guard, they're going to find a way to score. What does he recruit? He recruits skilled dudes. So they're going to find ways to score. Their offense is going to get better. We know that. Ultimately, the knock on him has always been like the toughness factor, right, of his players overall, of that, of their groups. And you can't say that right now. You just can't.
I asked him after the Philly game, or after the Villanova game, I said, if 20 years ago I would have told you that a John Beilein coach team was a defensive juggernaut, what would you have said? And he just started laughing.
Did he?
Yeah. But and then he said, to be fair, we did run a pretty good 1-3-1 zone back in the day. I was like, exactly. That's the point. You got guys that are out here just stealing people's souls, right? Xavier Simpson stole Colin Gillespie's soul, just playing a man-to-man, saying, you're not going to beat me. And he, 20 years ago, they were throwing a 1-3-1 at you and hoping that it confused you enough that you wouldn't be able to score on him. That's the difference in that John Beilein and this John Beilein. So I was very impressed.
Is there a guy, if I give you one game with equal talent, and I say you pick the coach, who do you want?
You're going to be surprised by my answer.
You might choose Beilein.
It might be Beilein, but you want to know who I would go with? I'd probably go with Rick Pitino.
Go ahead.
Is that crazy?
Who?
Rick Pitino.
Well, he's not in the game anymore, dumbass.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Pitino would be in the equation.
He would be in the equation. John Beilein would definitely be in that equation as well. Although, the thing with Beilein is that I think that he's at his best when you give him a group of guys and he can work with them over a long stretch. Yeah. Does that make sense? I think that if you just gave a group of guys to Pitino, he might be able to figure out how to get them to fit together a little bit better, a little bit more quickly, if that makes sense. All right, so we need to talk about UConn and Syracuse last night. Both of us are heading to the Garden. We're going to see Bol Bol tonight. We're going to see UConn play Iowa tonight. We're going to see Syracuse and Oregon in the consolation game, which is not something that I think anybody expected to happen. So talk to me about UConn. Talk to me about Danny Hurley. I know you know him really well. Did you expect them to be able to do this at this point to knock off a very good Syracuse team, top 10, top 15-ish?
No. You didn't. Danny Hurley didn't. Tom Moore's assistant didn't. Jim Calhoun didn't. Nobody did. I think they caught him at the right time. I mean, with Franklin Howard out, they don't really have a point guard. Jalen Carey's going to be good, but he's not a point guard yet. He's a scoring guard, and we saw that. He was rattled early. He can get to the basket and score, but he's not a guy who's going to make things easier for anybody else. So I think that was one of the reasons you saw Shea Brissett struggle. You saw Tyus Battle struggle. But listen, let's give all the credit to UConn and Danny Hurley for getting his players to play hard as shit, which they didn't do last year. They were soft as anything. They wouldn't guard. They didn't move the ball. They didn't make shots. Part of it is Al-Tariq Gilbert looked healthy. That changes everything for UConn, because now you go from where everything's on Jalen Adams to now where you have the best backcourt in the league and one of the best backcourts in the country, when it's Jalen Adams and Gilbert, because Jalen can't do it all himself. He's not Shabazz Napier. And I think even if you put Shabazz Napier on last year's team, he couldn't do it all himself. And Eric Cobb looked like a good player last night, where Eric Cobb didn't make it at South Carolina, was kicked out there, was nearly kicked out at UConn. He gave him some minutes, and they played hard. Bottom line was they did what Kevin Ollie's teams did not, which was play hard and compete. Ultimately, and that's what Danny Hurley's teams are going to do. I felt like Kevin Ollie's teams just gave up.
Yes, and that's exactly what Danny Hurley said. Before the season, I had a chance to talk with him at AAC Media Day, and that was one of the points that he made, was the last couple of years, whenever he called it hangdog face. He said he doesn't want hangdog face. Is that when this team kind of got down a little bit, they quit, and their heads would go down, and they would look sad, and it was that old – that old hound dog cartoon with the droopy face. You know what I'm talking about? He sent that picture of that dog to the group chat when he first got there with the team, and basically said, I don't want to see this face on you guys. I want you guys to be excited, to be happy about it. So he basically had to build them back up. And specifically with Jalen Adams, he made a point to say that Jalen was one of the biggest offenders of that. And since he is the best player on the team and people look to him when things are going poorly or another team makes a run or, you know, they're losing by 5 with 2 minutes left and Jalen Adams is looking down and he's sad, the rest of the team is going to feed off that. So he had to rebuild Jalen Adams and get into a guy that played hard and cared. He had to rebuild the team into a group of guys that were having fun playing basketball again. And I think that's what you saw last night more than anything. You know, they're not going to hit 11 for 18 or whatever it was from three. Like, that's not going to happen all that much. They were 12 for 21. They're not going to get lucky and go up against a team that doesn't have a point guard all that often. But when they go out and they just play as hard as they can like they did last night, like, that will be good enough to get them in the mix for the top of the AAC this year. And if they finish near the top of the AAC, they're going to be in the mix for an at-large bid because those bids got to come from somewhere.
Can they win? If Alterique Gilbert stays healthy, can they win the AAC this year? I never thought I'd ask that question with that roster.
Why not?
But the league stinks. Yeah,
yes.
The league stinks.
Yes. Why not? Who in that league can you look at and say is definitively better than UConn? Nobody.
Jalen Adams and Alterique Gilbert, when they're healthy, are both first-team all-league guys, right? So they've got two of the top five players. They're both guards. They're both point guards. Like, I'll take that over anything Central Florida has. I'll take that over anything Houston or Cincinnati has right now. Mm-hmm. SMU's down. Wichita is obviously down. I know they've been up and down so far. But, yeah, I would say, like, especially if Eric Cobb can kind of pick up on this and show any level of consistency. And I like Josh Carlton. I think Josh Carlton's got a chance.
Yeah, Tyler Polley stretched the floor for him last night. Even the Yokwe kid is, like, he had a couple of really bad turnovers last night. But he's still someone that can protect the rim and can play hard, and he got some rebounds. You know, he's not bad for 10 to 12 minutes. Yes.
And the Smith kid was good.
Well, that was my other point. If you look at Danny Hurley's team at Rhode Island, they played four guards last year. They had Jared Terrell was basically their power forward with E.C. Matthews and Fats Russell, and I'm blanking on the other names. But they basically played four guards. They put the Hassan, whatever his name was, kid at the five. They basically Hassan Martin. And they basically just said, look, we're going to pressure you. We're going to try to force turnovers. We're going to get up in you, and you're going to try to guard our guards, and you're not going to be able to do it. And that's what he has with this group. You know, Jalen Adams, I think one of the most important stats from last night is that Jalen Adams led this team in defensive rebounds. If you're going to get him being tough as the guy that kind of sometimes gets forced into the being the biggest like guard on the floor, being the four almost, and he gets 7 defensive rebounds against a Syracuse team that is like as big as anybody in the country, that matters. That helps. That matters.
Yeah, that's big time. And that's what Jalen Adams was always known for. Like, coming out, he's going to be the next Shabazz Napier, right? Tough Boston point guard.
Another Roxbury kid.
Talented kid in the world. Right, exactly. So, like, that's what he's got to get back to. And I feel like Hurley and Jalen Adams are the perfect, perfect match.
Yes, and if he can get the best out of him, that's something that is going to be very, very good for UConn in the long term. All right, before I let you get out of here, we got the Maui Invitational coming up. We have Duke and Auburn on one side. We have Gonzaga and Arizona on the other side. Give me some predictions on what you see happening there.
I mean, Duke's going to win by 100, right? Everybody says that. Like, Duke's just going to win every game by 100. They're never going to lose. Like, come on. Like, it is amazing they played as well as they did in their first game, but they're not going to be able to sustain this, especially from a perimeter shooting standpoint. I'm not saying they're going to lose in the Maui Invitational, but I'm saying they're going to lose games this year. They're going to lose at Virginia, or they're going to lose at Syracuse because they don't shoot well against the zone. Again, Auburn's an interesting one for me, because I actually think the addition or the re-addition of Austin Wiley hurts Auburn. I really do. I believe it hurts Auburn. I think Bruce Pearl's teams are at their best when they have a DeSean Murray type at the four, or they play, you know, three guards and they just scrap it up. And, you know, Dane Bradshaw back in the day when he was at Tennessee. I think those are his best teams. I don't think Austin Wiley can't guard anybody. I think they're better playing small ball, and I think they'd have a better chance of beating Duke if they play small ball. But we'll see. I mean, you know, to me, Brown's got to go for, you know, he's got to make a bunch of shots in that game if they end up playing him. And Gonzaga without Tilly, I don't know. I don't know if they're good enough, if they're there yet to beat a Duke team that looks – I mean, they do. They look terrific so far. And the unsung hero of that Duke team, Rob, is Trey Jones. Mm-hmm. He's the unsung hero because he doesn't give a you-know-what about scoring the basketball. he's all about, kind of like his brother, about winning. Now, his brother made big, big shots, big ball shots. I don't think Trey's going to do that. But all he cares about right now is just making sure his teammates are happy. And he's got three big, big mouths to feed, and he's feeding all three of them.
He is the quintessential winner, and he is he's a better defender. Like, he's different from both of them. Both Trey and Tyus are, like, born and bred winners, right? But where Tyus was more cerebral and thought the game, was a guy you wanted in ball screens, is probably going to end up being a coach one day. Like, he just understands basketball like that. Trey Jones is a guy that is more athletic. He's tougher. He's
better
going to be
defender.
Yes, and he's going to set the tone for him defensively, and that's the thing. On Maui,
they need that.
I don't think that Auburn wins because Auburn wants to run, and I don't think that you can run with Duke. I think that is just a recipe for disaster. I think the reason that Army was able to hang with them is because they controlled possession and they didn't let Duke get out on the break. Auburn's going to let them get out on the break. That could be a disaster. I think Gonzaga's got a shot because they have the big athletic wings.
But don't you have to run? Here's my question to you. Don't you have to run because you got to put them in transition defense? So, when you get the ball, you don't think you got to go?
No, because I think where they're going to struggle is if you kind of move the ball from side to side and make them have to guard multiple actions on multiple sides of the floor. Because I think that, you know, as athletic as Zion and RJ and Cam are at this point, I think that if you put them in one-on-one situations, they're going to be able to hold their own. But if you make them have to get over to help side and then recover and then rotate and move in a half-court defense, I'm not sure that they are there yet. I think the way that you beat them is to kind of slow it down. That's why I like your Virginia call. That's why I like your Syracuse call. And it's why I think both Gonzaga and North Carolina might have a chance. Not necessarily because of the way that they slow the ball down, but because they have the big athletic guys, Rui Hachimura, Brandon Clark. I think Corey Kispert's got a little bit of size on him that can match up with
Kispert,
their wings.
By the way,
North Carolina,
I'm a huge Corey Kispert guy.
That can make so much sense in the world. He is so on brand for you.
No question, right? Like,
no
question. If there's somebody who loves Corey Kispert, it's going to be me.
It's going to be you. I'm going to let you go after this. Last thing. Okay, I swear this is the last one. North Carolina, they're like sneaky awesome this year, right? Am I reading too much into this? Cam Johnson looks healthy. Nazir Little is really, really good. I think Kobe White's starting to figure it out. Luke May at the five. The big guys that they have.
Garrison Brooks has been great.
So they're better than people are giving them credit for, right? Are we sleeping on North Carolina?
Hell yeah. No. I think you're right, but I think ultimately there's one thing that matters for Carolina because everybody else is coming. Like, Nasir Little's going to come, and he already is. And like you said, Cam Johnson, Kenny Williams, they're veterans. Luke May's terrific at what he does. Kobe White is the key. He's the period. He is the key to Carolina and whether they can go deep, whether he can learn how to, you know, he's never going to be a pure point or make guys better. But Joe Berry didn't do that. He never did that. Like, that's the crazy thing. Joe Berry was not a point guard. He was a great leader, but he didn't make people better. He scored the basketball. So Kobe White can do that. He's just got to mature fairly quickly because this team is going to need him, you know, come February and March to play at a high, consistent level. He can't have those kind of nights off. He's still got to move the ball, make the right plays, because they have everything else you need. Kenny Williams isn't even doing it. He can't make a shot right now, and they're still looking pretty good.
And he shut down your boy Fletcher McGee.
He's Fletcher, such a good defender, though.
Fletcher McGee Kenny's still has nightmares about Kenny Williams. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
He was in his head. The last thing on the point that you made about Joel Berry, Theo Pinson was the best thing that ever happened to Joel Berry's legacy. It's true.
Why?
Because he was their point guard last year. And once they kind of got into offense, I think Theo averaged, I want to say it was 10.6 boards and 5 assists. Once they got down into the half court and had to run something, it ran through Theo, not through through Joel Berry. So they don't have that guy this
year. Who do you run it through now? That's the question. It can be, you know, by committee. Like, Luke May is a good passer, so certainly you can run a lot of stuff through him. And I think Kenny Williams can, you know, they can move the ball, but I think Kobe White is ultimately going to be the key to this team and whether they make a run. Because, like you said, they're kind of quietly sneak up on some people for a little while. I'm going to see them in Vegas this coming week. They play in a tournament with Michigan State. UCLA in Texas. And, you know, for me, it's just another opportunity to stay at the Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, Vegas. I was going to say, shocker that you're going to Vegas. Who would have seen that coming?
Third time at the Cosmopolitan, third trip since July.
And
you know what? I've already pitched, right?
What?
Mountain West, WCC, Mountain West,
yes,
and
of course.
Pac-12 conference tournaments.
Yes, of course, because you could spend 10 straight days in Vegas. That's what you're doing. You got to figure it out, man. Look, I will give you credit. I'll give you all the credit in the world. You got this thing figured out, Goodman.
Well, I got to figure it out, except I got my butt kicked at the blackjack tables on the last trip. So I'm not sure how well I have it figured out, but at least I have fun doing it. I can I'm bringing the family along. My daughter's 15. She's never been to Vegas, so we're going to go to that Beatles Cirque du Soleil show. We're going to get tickets for that. And, you know, I'm just going to pray that when my wife and I go down and play blackjack at, like, midnight, that my daughter doesn't find a way to get out of her room past us.
She will. She'll figure it out.
She's pretty good.
What is she, 16 now? She's 16 and a good man. She's going to figure it out, man.
Yeah, I know. It's scary, but I think you're probably right. I think we're going to get, like, a call from somebody saying, like, yeah, we've got your daughter here, and she's playing, you know, slot machines or something like that. She looks like 17 or 18, so she could probably get away with it for a few minutes.
I bet she probably has a fake ID, too, so maybe that'll work.
Well, if she's anything like my nephews, yeah, you're probably right. Yep. She probably learned it from them.
Yep. All right, man. Well, listen, I'm going to let you get out of here. I don't want you to get any more accidents on your drive. I think the last time I talked to you on the phone while you were driving, you ran out of gas on the highway. You remember that?
That's true. That is true. Yeah. That's happened a few times as well. I'm actually sitting here parked outside of my buddy's apartment. I'm going to pick him up. We're going to drive to New York, and I can't wait to see your Izzy Prestakis do tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm getting it done, man. I'm getting it done right now.
All right.
I'm calling Jonathan, and he's going to get it done.
Good luck.
All right, later. All right. Thanks.
Later.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.